Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us for the Texas Scorecard Friday Roundup. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor of Texas Scorecard. Sitting across from me, Luke Macias, the conservative voice of Texas. This is his moniker, the Luke Macias Show. By the way, how do you, the conservative voice of Texas? We might have to argue a little bit about that.
It's presumptuous. It is. You know, one of my staff, when we were setting it up, we called it the Luke Macias Show, and they were like, we need something better than the Luke Macias Show. And I said, no, let's just call it the Luke Macias Show. They said, well, Joe Rogan has the Joe Rogan experience.
Right. He's kind of first on that.
Yeah. But I was like, I don't think you can start off your podcast and call it an experience like on the first episode. Like, trust me, you'll have it. Yeah, I don't know. So I figured we had to stick with just like the plain show. But you're right. I probably think a little too highly of myself when I say the conservative voice.
Well,
a conservative voice.
A conservative voice, the conservative voice. Either way, that's now, that show's now hosted. We've got it here at Texas Scorecard, and we'll talk about that a little bit at the end of the show. But if you're watching live right now on Facebook, you might notice a little bit of a different environment right now. A lot of changes here at Texas Scorecard. Also physically, we're in a new office. We got a studio sort of being built right now. But I got to tell you, it feels so good not to be working from home. I don't know if any of y'all have been working from home. It really is, right? I mean, you think, oh, working from home, this would be kind of nice. And it's more like living in your office, I think, sometimes than it is working from home. You know, you can never escape. So great to actually be here sitting across from somebody. And we're going to dive in. We're going to talk about a few of the big issues we've been seeing coming across this week in Texas politics. And by the way, if you're watching live right now on Facebook, you have any questions or comments, please feel free to leave them in there. But the first thing I want to talk about is this movement we've seen from Governor Greg Abbott this week. Okay, so we've talked about in the past that you've had some cities across the nation, but even here in Texas, defunding the police. You had Austin cutting $150 million, a third of its police budget from next year's budget. That happened a few weeks ago. You have Dallas right now considering doing the same or even cutting $200 million from their budget. Mm-hmm. Other cities are talking about it. Other left is talking about it. Governor Greg Abbott, I think, has found a very, very interesting political opportunity lately, which is that he's really, really pushing sort of this Back the Blue initiative where he's laying out some legislative priorities that are some legislative proposals, rather, to, I guess, kind of punish, curtail these cities from actually defunding or cutting their police budget. And as he's come out, you know, I think there's actually a lot of questions that come out with this. The first we had a few weeks ago, he said, legislative proposal, if a city defunds the police, their property taxes are frozen, right? Which I think some people are seeing that and thinking, well, that'd be nice. Can my city defund the police? Can that happen?
Yep.
Now the latest thing, he's kind of taking on annexation, saying forever, you no more can you annex an area if you defund the police.
Yep.
I think we'll probably see a few more of these, it looks like. And you know, wondering, why is Governor Abbott doing this and why is he doing this right now?
It is interesting. You know, I'm thinking at some point he might just say, hey, abortion is banned in your city if you're going to defund the police. They're just going to like basically threaten that you will be a conservative bastion if you dare to defund the police, which also, like you said, presents this weird situation where a taxpayer is going, well, I don't want my police defunded, but I would really like my property taxes frozen.
Yeah.
In fact, Republicans have been telling me that my property taxes were frozen, that they did this groundbreaking reform that did that. So defunding the police is a radical idea. It is a good thing that Governor Abbott has decided that defunding the police is a bad idea. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a pretty easy position to take. I mean, you, I think, pointed out earlier that, I mean, Joe Biden is walking away and saying defunding the police is a bad idea. So this is not a hard, courageous step to take. This is a position that is in line with independents and Democrats. And I feel if you're a conservative Texan and you want Governor Abbott to fight for the values that you hold, you just need to hope that independent voters and some conservative Democrats also agree with you, because then he will fight for you, right? So it's a good position to take. It's good to put the Democrats in a position where they have to take a position, which they have had a hard time doing. But to your point, it does seem a little strange when it comes to the actual policy proposal, basically saying you're going to have – we're going to force conservative reforms on you as a city if you dare defund the police. So then you're kind of de-incentivizing actual property tax freezes. So you can't come in and say, hey, we're going to freeze everyone's property tax.
Because that's now a punishment.
Because that's how we punish cities. That's not actually how we reward taxpayers.
Right.
And that, to me, is a real strange issue.
It's a little confusing. I mean, and to say nothing of, look, they're setting these proposals. None of these things have actually been written. We don't even know, you know, as sort of an aside, what exactly defunding the police, how that would be defined.
Yes.
I mean, can they cut their budget a little bit if they find some efficiency or no more? Can they do that? We don't know that. But, you know, if you're going to put out these proposals, I'm thinking, well, why not just go for the moon right away, right? Why not say, well, your city will be abolished. You'll be controlled by the state government or something, right?
Yep. It'll be interesting to see what kind of creative proposals come up next session, or whether he stays on this. We're going to force conservative policies only as punishment, not as a reward to the taxpayer. I think that sends the wrong message to taxpayers and citizens who would like their property rights protected, who would like their pocketbooks protected. So hopefully they come up with a more creative way to punish these cities. But it's important to realize that, again, Abbott will challenge a leftist thought as long as independent voters don't like that leftist thought. If independent voters are majority in favor of a certain policy, you will see that the governor will avoid that, you know, as much as he possibly can.
Well, and speaking of avoiding things, he announced last week, and look, when Friday Roundup records, goes live, breaking news happens, so who knows? Maybe this is happening right now. But he announced last week, sort of teased that he would be giving some additional announcements about what a potential reopening would look like, or at least, I guess, the second reopening, since he scaled things back a couple months ago. He teased last week that he'd be doing that. Instead, we're here at Friday. It's the middle of the day. We're recording this. We still haven't seen that. Do you expect to see anything this week, or are Texans going to have to wait another week to be able to see any steps there?
Yeah. I mean, as of right now on Twitter, there's still nothing. So let's assume that that breaking news is not happening as we're talking. I would suspect that if he hasn't announced it already, he probably won't announce it till next week. And the difficulty is going to be there's still no rationale for the 25% or 50% or 60% or here's how you can do this. The regulations aren't making sense. In my mind, they're constantly just the government reasserting its power over the business, right? So we know that we probably can't justify how we've been hurting you so far, but we're not just going to say you can do whatever you want, because that would take the power away from us, which is the same reason that the scorecard has reported on the fact that the governor keeps extending this declaration of emergency declaration, because he needs that 30 days. So I think we'll see something next week. He won't open Texas back up. He's only going to say a couple things that hopefully get him a Fox News headline that says Governor Abbott started to open Texas up, but doesn't do enough to actually open our state so that he can still message to independent voters and conservative Democrats that he's still being the more rational, reasonable person than some of the other more aggressive Republican governors.
Well, I know we'll be watching that in the coming days ahead. Switching topics a little bit, this is something that we're sort of seeing play out right now. We're going to have a story about that at TexasScorecard.com up today. But you've got a few lawmakers in the Texas House calling out, I mean, this is really serious, child pornography that's being pushed by Netflix. I mean, one of the biggest entertainment companies out there has posted this movie. It's called Cuties, is what it's called. It's essentially this—
It's not cute.
It's not cute. Yeah, it's this film they've published, even as you did have people calling them out even before they published it. They went ahead, put it on their platform. Essentially, if you don't know about this, I don't know, what's the one sentence? It's you know, it's 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds, kind of a coming-of-age movie with these girls, but it literally includes nudity of these children, kind of sexually suggestive themes, and Netflix not backing down. Well, you actually had State Representative Matt Schaefer come out and say he's contacted Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton and asked him to look into whether or not Netflix is violating any child pornography laws. And you've looked a little bit into this, or it's kind of been going around. It seems pretty explicit that, yes, it absolutely does.
It really does. It not only seems that this is a violation of what we currently define as child pornography. It's a really interesting thing to take a step back. If you remember, Netflix had like a banner or the cover photo of this movie that came out, and that got a lot of controversy. Mm-hmm. And it was the girls, you know, spreading their legs and stuff, 11-year-old girls bending over, sticking out their butt. And so people started freaking out about it. And Netflix takes this little poster down and says, hey, there was a poster, and it is not—
This doesn't really represent— This mis- yeah,
yeah. misrepresented So basically, we did a bad job picking the picture to advertise this movie on. Mm-hmm. Now, they didn't realize that the content in the video is worse than anything that one-page poster had, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know who at Netflix said, let's take down this picture and then everything will be all right, and then decides to actually publish the movie, which is getting massive amount of blowback. And you're seeing, really, I think, an awakening not only from conservatives, but also people even in the middle who are saying, wait a second, I might be with Democrats on Medicaid, but I am not for child pornography. Why is that all of a sudden becoming a left versus right issue? But you're not seeing anybody on the left calling for the removal of this video. And it's an interesting thing. Let's go through what child pornography is. I know you and Brandon, we talked about kind of laying that out. Lila Rose did a great job publishing what's called the DOST test, which is what this Fifth Circuit created as a factors to determine child pornography. And in there, it includes whether the focal point of the visual depiction is on the child's genitalia or pubic area. We know that happens in this film multiple times. Whether the setting of the depiction is sexually suggestive, that is, in the place or pose associated with sexual activity. And all you have to do is watch a 30-second clip of this to know absolutely, that is what this is, right? And there's four others. We don't need to go into all of them, but Matt Schaefer has let out, and he's honestly put it on to the Attorney General to say, this could be a clear violation of state statute, and you need to prosecute. And then Bob Hall and Tony Tinderholt came out, and you're starting to have these lawmakers that are saying, wait a second, I'd like to make sure that either this is currently illegal, and if it's not illegal, let's make it illegal.
Well, it needs to be. And speaking of, State Representative Tony Tinderholt in the comments right now saying he's looking to do a fix, comments down there, this immoral behavior and societal conditioning has no place in Texas. I think a lot of people agree.
Absolutely.
A lot of people agree. So absolutely disgusting.
And honestly, it's a great conversation to have because who's on the other side of this?
Yeah, who's fighting?
I would love to see that debate on the House floor, right? Who's going to get up on the other side and say, no, really, this type of indecency has a place in society.
Just wild stuff. And so kind of a conversation that I didn't think we would expect to be having in the upcoming legislative session, but we may end up having to have. Another thing, speaking of societal conditioning, public schools, okay? Public schools reporting, or it looks like Texas Homeschool Coalition, reporting that they think, based on their data, that public school withdrawals are increasing pretty exponentially due to, in part, the coronavirus. Okay, if people remember, you've got pretty much schools are back now, whether that means people are at home virtually. Mm-hmm. Some places they're doing in-person classes. If they are in person, I mean, literally, if you've seen these pictures online, they're wearing, they've got plexiglass shields. Mm-hmm. Their kids are wearing masks. They're 6 years old. Yep. A lot of parents saw this and said, I don't think I'm going to be doing that with my kids, right? Yep. We had to do some homeschooling, right, is what they're saying, you know, during the March, April, May sort of area, and say, okay, I think we can do this. And so Texas Homeschool Coalition announcing a big increase of people that are going through them to withdraw from public schools. And Luke, you had a funny tweet, I think. It was like, you know, you kind of like almost old school. It was like a dying breed whenever you were doing it.
Yep.
And now it's on the rise.
Yeah. You know, you'd have family members worried whether you're getting socialized or not. Right. And all sorts of, you're kind of see this outcast. And then all of a sudden 1 in 10 families is homeschooling right now. And it is an interesting phenomenon that's happening. I think you have two different groups of people that are leaving the public school system to homeschool. One is a group of people that just were forced to homeschool. Right. I mean, I had a bunch of family and friends who were taking pictures and posting it all over social media saying, hey, I've been forced to be a homeschool mom or a homeschool dad. And so some of them realized, you know what, I can do this. I'm capable. I think spending that time with my kid is important. You have another group of parents, and I think that's probably the biggest group that left and is now deciding to homeschool. The other group are people that all of a sudden got access to their curriculum for the first time. And I don't know if you saw this. I can't remember. I'm going to misquote the state, but I think it was North Carolina or one of the other states up there, kind of northeast central area, that tried to basically say that parents weren't allowed to look at the curriculum even though their kids were at home.
At home, yeah.
Yeah, and they haven't done that in Texas. But the reason I think they did that was because in Texas, the other thing that I've heard a lot of testimonies from, even talking to different homeschool groups, is that they had families reaching out saying, I just laid my eyes on my kids' curriculum for the first time in years, and I can't send them back to public school.
Yeah.
And so that's another.
We saw some of that in Wiley, but some other school districts as well, where parents are seeing the content. They're saying, "Wait, this is what my kid's doing."
This is what you're learning?
Oh no, right?
Yeah. And I just for the sake of an educational soapbox, it's important to remember that kids succeed in education where parental involvement is high. Okay. And so the reason homeschooling ends up being a good alternative is that most of those situations involve a parent that's highly engaged. The truth is, if you're being homeschooled, but your parents are pretty disengaged, you're not getting that great of an education. If you are going to a public school system, but your parents are heavily engaged in your education, you're probably actually going to do very, very well. And the same is true for private, the same is true for home. Mm-hmm. It's just the fact that the type of parent that actually brings their kid home is often one that's going to provide even more attention to them. So I think parents getting more involved in education is a huge win for
kids. Yeah, that's the big story, regardless of how that happens. But
yes.
But certainly a lot of people picking homeschooling right now.
Absolutely.
And I say that, by the way, as a product of public education, which
that's
maybe
right.
explains a little bit. I don't know.
Yep. A lot, actually.
Okay. Last kind of big political thing going on. We've obviously got the elections coming up in November. We're seeing some of that. But there is an election happening, or rather is about to start happening next Monday in Texas, a special election for Senate District 30. This is the Senate seat that was held by State Senator Pat Fallon. He's going to Congress.
Yep.
So you've got this vacancy there, and you've got several candidates in there. But the two big ones, the two ones that you would kind of bet on right now are State Representative Drew Springer, who's an incumbent, and then you've got Shelley Luther, of course, the Dallas salon owner that was famously jailed for violating the reopening her salon. And, you know, I think you talked – you had a really good explanation on your show a couple weeks ago. Folks can find where you talked about Drew Springer right now kind of being put in this position where he voted against taxpayer-funded lobbying, okay? The short of it is, if you haven't seen that, you give a great explanation. The one-sentence explanation is he voted for taxpayer-funded lobbying, ... after completely gutting it and making sure it didn't apply to any of his citizens. Then ban on taxpayer-funded lobbying.
Yep.
This issue coming up again, though, it seems like he's really, really doubling, tripling down on this misrepresentation of his own record.
Yep.
You've even seen TV ads, and you've seen him speaking at forums where he says he's for a ban on taxpayer-funded lobbying, and yet literally the record shows the exact opposite.
Yep.
And I think this is an example. Like, it's not just about this race, but I think it's an example of what people hate so much about politics.
Yes, it is. I've realized that when a politician really gets called out for the hypocrisy of their own voting record, that some of them kind of pull back, but then some just double down, right? And we saw that a little bit with the Dennis Bonin situation, not to rehash that entire episode. I think our listeners are probably pretty familiar with that. But you have some politicians that literally get confronted with the reality of their own actions, and they just think that if I just say something else happened enough, then people will start to believe it, even when the facts are laid out in front of them. To back up, you had – I know we've covered this a little bit, but a couple of years ago, Sylvia Garcia was the state senator, got elected to Congress. She goes to the governor. She says, hey, she's a Democrat, and she says, I want to resign and have a special election to fill my Senate seat. But she wanted to stay till January because if – the way our pension system works for our state lawmakers, which probably should be changed, but if you just get like a day or two of a year – you get credited that entire year for your pension. Okay? So that's how it works. So if you're going to resign as a state rep or a state senator, you want to resign on like January 1 of 2021 because the pension system treats you like you've been there the whole time. And so the governor says, I can't do it because you intend to resign. You're not resigning. So this time, Pat Fallon gets nominated to Congress, wants to resign, but wants to stay on until January. And they decide to write a letter that essentially says, I'm resigning now, effective January. And I think that was an effort to try to give a massive advantage to Drew Springer, because Drew Springer is a sitting state representative. He's honestly been kind of in lockstep with the governor during the last legislative session.
Endorsed by the governor and his previous campaign.
For re-election. Yeah. And honestly, even when it comes to his closeness to Bonin. I mean, we know that during the Bonin whole situation, I mean, Drew Springer was one of the top people calling members, trying to keep them on Dennis Bonin's team up until the very end. And that's something that Greg Abbott, I think, largely would rather have that regime in power. So he knows that with this person, he's guaranteed somebody who's in lockstep with what he's trying to do. And then you have Shelley Luther say, I'm interested in the seat. And now you have a situation where they had to bend over backwards to create a 30-day campaign. Literally, think of this. You're somebody who lives in Decatur, Texas, yeah. okay, or Munster, or Wichita Falls, Sherman. And 2 weeks ago, you didn't know a single person running for Senate. Mm-hmm. You now have maybe heard a name or two. Maybe you saw a news report or an article that said these people have filed. And on Monday, you have to go vote. This Monday, early voting starts. Yeah. You're going, wait, I don't even know how to spell the names of the people. There hasn't been a forum in my community. And I think a lot of people rightfully feel that the politicians are rigging the game to try to get one of their own in power. And with the taxpayer-funded lobbying situation, it's a perfect example. Drew Springer voted to take 12 counties that are in this Senate district and take them out of the ban on taxpayer-funded lobbying.
Right.
His current House district, he drew out entirely.
The entire thing.
He said, hey, I want a ban on taxpayer-funded lobbying except for all of the people that vote for me. And this is something that rural legislators say all the time. This is why I respect people like Kyle Biederman, Mays Middleton, Bob Hall, who have said, the way I'm going to represent rural Texas is to make sure they are included in conservative reforms, right? You often have rural senators and reps that go, in order to be a good rural rep, I have to make sure that the ban on taxpayer-funded lobbying doesn't apply to rural Texas and only applies to Democrat counties and cities. I need to make sure that property tax reform is not as strong on these rural cities as it is on the urban cities. So the reality is it's easier for rural cities and counties to raise your property tax Democrat urban-run area.
Texas scorecard. Stuff we've been doing, but with a lot more. We've kind of been teasing a little bit of that. And part of it is an announcement we made this week that we've got, of course, the Luke Macias Show moving over. Now, Luke, you've been doing this podcast now for a year and a half?
Yep, almost 2 years.
Almost 2 years. And you kind of, so it's every week, every Monday comes out. Sometimes it's an interview. Sometimes it's a quick hit on something that you've been thinking about. You know, what's the driving force behind that, and why bring it to us over here at Texas Scorecard?
So when I started the podcast, there were a couple stories that I felt like weren't getting told. Mm-hmm. And that was honestly how I started it. Jeff Younger was our very first conversation, and that is somebody who the Texas Scorecard has written extensively about. He is the father of James Younger, who's the young man whose mom started to sexually transition him at three.
Right.
And she is fighting in court and honestly is currently winning due to some various recent decisions, the ability to block her son's puberty and prevent him from ever hitting puberty and then eventually have his genitals mutilated. And that is the real kind of stuff that's happening in Texas. There are several hundred children who this is happening to. And I just felt like stories like that weren't getting told. And that's how I kind of decided to start the show. Hey, I'll just tell this story and see where it goes. And of course, that got national coverage. Ben Shapiro, Glenn Beck, a lot of other people picked it up. And we started a national conversation, and especially a conversation in Texas about the need to stop this type of barbaric practice in Texas. We weren't able to ban it because the leadership, Dennis Bond and Greg Abbott, even Dan Patrick at the time, wanted to avoid these social issues. But that began, and then we went through the legislative session together, right? And we saw Republicans talking about raising taxes on people, and we saw all sorts of other attacks that come in that as somebody who holds conservative principles, all of a sudden you're seeing massive amount of not only the wrong policies getting put information campaign that what's going on. That's why my show, this program, everything the Texas Scorecard does is so important, because we have to work overtime to make sure that people actually can peel back the layers and see what's really happening. And so that's what then the show kind of became as we continue to produce it. I try to do every other week a conversation with someone, and every other week just kind of general commentary and update on stuff on politics. Sometimes it doesn't always happen that way, but that's what we try.
Cool. Well, that's all available. You can listen to it on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, all the places where you get your podcast from. You can listen to it there. And of course, we have the video as well. Well, thank you so much for joining, Luke.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you to everybody watching. By the way, Angie comments, I should have mentioned this, says Luke Macias is a fabulous addition to Texas Scorecard. We couldn't agree more. So thank you to everybody watching. If you have any questions about anything we might have said, you're watching this later, please feel free to drop in the comments. I'll try to look at those after the show. But for right now, thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend. Thank you for listening to this week's Friday Roundup from Texas Scorecard. Remember, you can head to the Empower Texans Facebook page at 11 a.m. every Friday to watch the show live and get your questions in.